This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Chuang, joined by Xiao Ning and Philip C. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll talk to a gentleman who works for a company that used to be known as TransferWise.
That's right. Roshan is going to speak to Venkatesh Saha. He's the APAC expansion of Wise, or formerly known as TransferWise. Now, who are they? They are a London-based fintech player. They're Europe's most valuable unicorn, worth around $5 billion as of July 2020. Now, the company started with just two people swapping money to pay mortgages, but they've moved markets since then and have now moving billions of dollars across the world. How has its decade-long journey changed the company to more than just a cross-border payment solution platform? And where does AirAsia fit?
Did you say AirAsia, Phil?
Sorry. Where does AirAsia fit in its expansion plan? Tune into The Breakfast Grill to find out more. Sorry.
Yes, AirAsia. And still very much in the tech vein. In the tech vein, the tech sector has been on a roller coaster ride in recent weeks with rather extreme price volatility. But the NASDAQ is still up around 6% year to date. It's fallen around 4% from its peak, but it's still there or thereabouts. For some insight into what's been driving all this volatility in tech stocks, we're talking to Jonathan Curtis, a vice president and a portfolio manager at the Franklin Equity Group. Jonathan, thanks for talking to us. All this volatility in tech stocks come down to this. Does it come down to the 10-year Treasury yields, or are there other factors at play?
Yeah, certainly the 10-year and rising interest rate expectations have been causing a lot of volatility in the space. But I think also, you know, listen, 2020 was a great year for some in tech because of our greater reliance on technology during the crisis. I think that some investors now are selling some of their tech holdings and buying, you know, more cyclically levered names that will benefit from reopening. I would argue, though, that tech actually is as much of a secular story as it is a cyclical story, and that with the reopening of the global economy, we will see tech do well as well.
But are you concerned that perhaps there is more money shifting into cyclicals now on the back of the expectations of a broader economic recovery globally?
Yeah, well, so certainly that dynamic is happening. But let's talk about sort of what happened in 2020. We saw the fundamentals of work-from-home companies, educate-from-home companies, entertain-from-home companies, all of those sort of COVID winners, e-commerce, they all did well. But there were a lot of areas of tech that struggled. Semiconductors, back-office software, even some areas of digital, you know, payments where you didn't have the cross-border dynamic going on helping earnings. So when the economies reopen, we know that consumers and businesses spend more on technology. And so as economies open, these other areas that are still well leveraged to the themes that we like, but maybe didn't have as good prospects in 2020 will recover. And that should drive a growth and good performance in the equities of those portions of the tech sector. So we don't think the sector is by any means done, if you will. We're just in a bit of a rotation into more cyclical areas of the market, of which tech has some, that are both also secular.
Yeah, so 2020, you said there were tech leaders and tech laggards, and you find that the tech laggards will probably drive forward. Where are the opportunities for tech leaders that were kind of moving up in 2020? Do you see the momentum in 2021?
Yeah, so I think what happened as 2020 went on is we were all shoved into our homes, shoved onto video calls, and sort of spent the first couple of months just wondering what had happened. And businesses were in really a similar position as they cobbled together the basics of being much more digital. As the year went on, they started realizing that, one, this was going to be something that was going to go on for longer, but two, something that was actually allowing them to be as productive or more productive than they were in a sort of pre-digital era. And so what we think is going to happen is as economies reopen and even offices reopen, we're going to remain in some of what of a hybrid mode. And so there are going to be many areas where investments started in this digital era, planning tools, team collaboration tools that businesses will double down on even post the reopening, because their employees are going to be working from home a lot more. They're going to be traveling a lot less. So digital selling tools. So there's a lot of sort of things that we learned during COVID that we're going to stick with and lean even more into, we believe, in 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, Jonathan, collaboration-based companies might be an intuitive, beneficiary of the re-entry theme, but what other sectors might be also attractive?
Sure. So, there are elements of digital payments. There are certainly a lot of secular growth going on in digital payments, and certainly firms like Square and PayPal did well during the crisis. But two companies that really struggled during the crisis were Visa and MasterCard. One, there was less in-store swiping of cards going on, but also a big portion of their earnings power comes from cross-border payments. And cross-border payments is all about travel. And so with travel down, a big portion of their earnings were negatively impacted. So as we get people traveling again, as the economy's reopened, that portion of their earnings their earnings stream will do well. That's a company that is seeing both secular growth, but has a really good cyclical story to tell. Same thing with a Twilio. They were a huge winner in COVID because of their ability to help businesses talk with consumers in digital ways, with text messages and voice calls. But about 10% of their revenue pre-crisis was tied to travel and hospitality sectors. Mm-hmm. All of that went to zero. So as the economies reopen and people start to travel again, we're going to see that portion of their business pick back up. And yet we'll continue, we believe, to see the secular growth that businesses really leaned into with using a platform like Twilio.
But Jonathan, at the end of the day, are there still going to be some tech subsectors that you're avoiding, and why?
Yeah, so listen, we are long-term investors, and so we are always trying to figure out what the world's going to look like in 3 to 5 years. And we are 100% confident that there's going to be a lot more cloud computing done on the platforms of Amazon and Microsoft and Google, but also on platforms like Cloudflare or on platforms like Datadog. And these companies do not use on-premise hardware. They don't buy servers from the server OEMs. They don't buy their own hard drives. They buy services from the cloud operators who deploy their own hardware. And oftentimes it's hardware they're building themselves. And so we think some of the on-premise legacy client server hardware companies are really going to struggle in the years ahead, and we are avoiding those sectors.
Now, we take a global picture. Do you see a distinction between how you approach China tech firms versus U.S. tech, or is there no distinction there for you?
Yeah, listen, we love companies that are innovative, period, full stop, and there are great innovators in China. The dynamic in China that makes investing in China a little more difficult is that the regulatory landscape is more opaque for us. And certainly we struggled with that at the end of 2020 when the Ant Financial IPO was canceled, and then subsequently Alibaba came under greater scrutiny for some of the practices that happened on their platform with regards to exclusivity. And so honestly, we didn't anticipate that those dynamics as well as we should have. But that was in part because sort of rulemaking in China is more opaque. And so the way you adjust for that is you have a higher country risk premium. And so we keep our position sizing in China a little on the smaller size because of that.
Another thing we have noticed, Jonathan, is lots of headlines about chip shortages. Now, how does this impact the tech sector? And, is it bad, good, and who could be the winners or losers from all this?
Yeah. So certainly this dynamic is going on. And in part, it's because you've got really strong mobile phone demand right now, very good PC demand. You've got the reopening trade or the reopening activity going on, but still constraints in the supply chain, moving semis around and getting them through the factories. Ultimately, the set, as we go to a more digital world, the demand for Internet of Things, electric vehicles, et cetera, is going to be really strong. That's going to be great for the operators of the world's most advanced fabs, so firms like TSMC, which we own in the fund, but also the equipment suppliers, Applied Materials, ASML, KLA Tencor, those companies that supply the gear that goes into those fabs, we think are going to do well. And so we have exposure to both TSMC and a group of semi-cap equipment companies.
Okay, Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. That was Jonathan Curtis, the Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Franklin Equity Group. Now, lots of stuff to unpack there. And I think sometimes we, you know, we willy-nilly put all the whole tech universe into a broad basket, but it's very broad and it's very deep and it's very liquid, this whole tech sector. And the whole value chain is just ginormous, right? Whether or not you're an equipment guy, you're a chip maker from the old school, to, you know, basically the new payments, people like TransferWise.
The cloud
like,
guys.
The cloud guys, right?
We always think FANG.
But it is so much more than that.
Deeper than that.
And there's the parallel universe. The parallel universe sits in China, right? But the problem, as Jonathan was saying, is that that parallel universe, it dances by to a different tune. You know what I mean?
And international fund managers want some, I guess they don't want it to be opaque, right? Like, for example, the Ant Financial, the IPO.
Who could have thunk?
Yeah, it was cancelled at the very last moment. It's not something that investors like, actually. But I think one thing is that chip shortages, which was the last question I asked, clearly there are going to be some big winners out there because the chip shortages are here to stay for at least 2 to 3 years.
I just want to see how Silterra and DNEX do this new outfit in terms of, and obviously the China element are there. And I just wonder, in terms of valuation, did Malaysia sell itself short when it comes to the valuation? Because it was a loss-making foundry, after all. It's been loss-making for a number of years.
I think it's a long-term game because, kind of ramping it up will take 5 years. I think the chip shortage is really a big opportunity because this quarter, there were a lot of supply constraints. There was a fire in a Japan factory for fiberglass. There was cargo freighter restriction for the 777s. So I think there's really a lot of upside there.
Okay, 7:46. We'll come back after this with a discussion on how the pandemic can be used to recalibrate the economy. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.